Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to episode 203 of Yes But Why podcast, featuring actor and personal trainer, Melissa Sledge. Melissa and I met at a photo shoot we were both hired on, and we enjoyed each other's company so much, we got together to record a podcast interview. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. This episode of Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. You can get your free audiobook download and your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Did you know that starting today, kids everywhere can instantly stream an incredible collection of stories, including titles across 6 different languages, that'll help them continue to dream, learn, and just be kids? All stories are free to stream on your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Also, check out our sponsor, podcastcadet.com, with resources for all levels of podcasting. Let the team at Podcast Cadet be there for you. At podcastcadet.com, get connected to professionals who can provide you with the support and advice you'll need to create and flourish with your own podcasting. While you are inside at home these days, get your creativity kickstarted. Listen to amazing stories on Audible and/or get your own podcast started with help from podcastcadet.com. One more thing before I let you go. So, we are in weird times these days, guys, and the entertainment jobs me and my family have been doing to make money for many years are all but dried up. If you have any work you need help with, from website design to copywriting to AV assistance to video production, let my company, HC Productions, help you find someone to help you. We need work, and our fellow live performers and AV techs need work too, so we are trying to help the lot. Email me at booking@hcproductions.org if you have any jobs we can help you with. So let's get back to this week's guest. This week on Yes But Why, we talk to Melissa Sledge, an Austin-based actor and fitness professional who, after losing 50 pounds herself, dedicated her life to teaching others how to look beyond the scale and focus on making daily healthy living practices. In between helping her clients live their best life, Melissa is also active as an actor and a model. In this conversation, we chat about Melissa's journey from salesperson to college counselor to fitness professional. Melissa shares her love of acting, and she talks about sinking her teeth into commercial workshops and acting classes to hone her craft. We discuss the attention she got from the health and wellness press and how that led her to create her own fitness business. Support Melissa right now by visiting melissasledge.com. That's melissasledge.com. And take advantage of the virtual personal training and fitness nutrition coaching she is currently offering. So without further ado, I present to you Yes But Why, episode 203. Melissa Sledge urges you to push past fear and be your best self. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah.
I met a girl that was a playwright, and we had connected under different circumstances. I think she was in a mutual class or something, because I was a business major, so wasn't doing anything artsy.
Right? Yeah.
And we connected, and I learned that she was a playwright, and she wrote a piece and wanted me to audition for it, and I did, and it's a two-person, you know, play. But yeah, I like ran for 3 nights, and we did all of the prep work with acting coaches, and it was super fun.
So did she, when she met you, did she like write something for you, or was it like you guys just happened to be friends and then she was like, hey, be part of this project I'm working on?
It was the latter. I think she spent time with me and was like, oh, you're really cool. And then it was, I've written this, will you read for it? And it just worked out. So yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
So the experience was like quite immersive, that sort of first play to be in, to have all sorts of backup. Was it like a theater department piece? Is that how you got all the acting coaches and stuff? Like,
it was part of, I can't recall if her major was theater related, but she just was an artist that liked to write poetry, and she liked to write and draw and was doing all of the stereotypical artisty things.
Yeah.
And was able to get everything as far as location and support from the university to facilitate everything. So maybe it was a class. Honestly, I don't even recall.
Yeah. Some people are just like that, you know?
Yeah.
Some people are like, I want to do this project, and then they just make it happen. Yeah. As opposed to a lot of people who are like, I want to do this project. I wonder how I can do it. And you're like, figure Susie's got like six plays she's right. already put on.
Right.
It's the third day of freshman year. Like, what's happening? You know? Oh, man. So that's super fun. What was the venue like? Like, what kind of first performance experience was it? Was it like a black box, a lot of audience, a little audience? What was the crowd like?
It was like a small classroom theater. So it was intended, I mean, it had a stage and it had seats for probably like 50 to 70 people. Mm-hmm. And it ran, you know, three nights, and each night, you know, it was a full house, and it was all different types of students. So I feel like the assignment was affiliated with a class. And I remember, this is a funny little nugget. So I went to Arizona State. Terrell Suggs, who was a football player, pro football player, also went to Arizona State and was playing at ASU.
Uh-huh.
He now, I think, recently got traded to the Chiefs. Long story short, after the third performance, I was like walking to class, and he's like, hey, you know, I saw you in the play. You did a really good job. Like, I'm really trying to get into acting too. And I just was kind of like, oh, okay. Like, like what, like, you're a football player and I'm this, like, you know, little girl that's just walking at night and you're approaching me to talk to me about acting, but whatever.
Wasn't he also in college, though?
Yes.
I mean, yes. He's not a, like, an adult man. He's a college person, though.
No, he's a student, but he's, yeah, like, massive.
He's a large person. He's a
very,
yes,
large person. Yes. So it was interesting for me just to connect with other people that our paths would not have crossed.
I like that he went to that play.
I do too.
Right? Like that, I don't know anything about this person,
yeah,
but I'm all like, yeah, maybe he's a football player stuck in whatever that world is, but he went to play
artist.
That one time.
He's an artist.
And he wants to be an actor.
Yeah.
Just wait. He'll be like the next, like when he finishes his sports career,
yeah,
he'll go and be like the host of a morning show and stuff like that.
Right. Like Michael Strahan.
Yeah. 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 Oh, I love him. It's so funny. I didn't realize he was even a sports player until like maybe a year or two ago. And they're like, wasn't he great in this? And I was like, what? He's the host of this show. And they're like, that's not what he does. And
yeah,
I was like, what? Yes, he does. Look. Oh, my God. So funny. Yeah, that's clearly what he wants.
Yeah.
You never know. You'll see him in an acting class one day.
Our paths will probably cross again.
Yeah. I mean, you know. Wherever he ends up after, I have not watched any of those NFL documentaries, but I've certainly watched enough commercials for them to know that it has a lot to do with like helping these human beings figure out what's going to happen after this like short-term job that they have.
Yeah.
They're like, this is a part-time job. What's next?
Yeah.
And I was like, how fascinating that they like, it's almost like college that they like help them prepare. Actually, no, it's not like college, because college, I feel like, does not help you prepare. But anyway, so the play that you're doing, just to bring it back, the play that this girl wrote, was it like political in some way? What was the like vibe? Because if she's not a theater major and this is set up in a certain way that lots of different people are seeing it, I'm really fascinated as to like what her assignment was that would have reached so many different people to draw them in. Or maybe, you know, she just has that energy and we don't know, but it turns out she's on Broadway right now. And we just, you know, we're like, dude, guys, she's amazing. Like, what? Oh, we didn't know.
So the story was about a father-daughter, both of which were African. So she was a princess. And she was trying to convince her father to let her go to the States to go to college. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of kind of African cultural context, the whole father-daughter dynamic, her creating the argument that, like, this will be a good thing for me, and, you know, I know that you'll miss me and I'll miss you too, but I need to go off and spread my wings and be an adult. So it showed just a little bit more context between the father-daughter relationship, but also the intercultural dynamics of different African families. So yeah, it was a two-person play. I played the daughter, and it was fun. And like with it anything, really the more you do right it, in. Yeah, the more you do it, the more comfortable you become, right? So the first night was scary, and then the second and third night, you're like, okay, this is old hat.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And by the third night, you're like, I can do that again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then everyone like claps for you at the end, and you're like, all right, I just did a thing.
Right.
And it's not even my thing, but it wasn't terrible.
Yeah. That's the best part about acting, I think, is the right. Like just general loud applause and direct compliments.
Right.
I enjoy that the most.
Yeah.
Like in the photo shoot where you and I met, mm-hmm. everyone was always so nice to us.
Was a really good crew, though.
Give us really a lot of compliments. And I was like, this is why people have big egos. You can't keep saying these nice things to me. I'm going to stand over there whether you compliment me or not. Like, this is too much. Yeah. Oh, my God. So funny. All right. So after you do this, you're still a business major. You don't just go like, oh, forget business. I'm going into theater now at this point, right? You still go and get a business degree. So you're working hard doing other stuff. Is there any other theater that you get involved in during that time? Has it become like a solid side gig?
No. And I think part of that stemmed from the fact that I was a business major. I graduated from college in 3 years. So I was trying to be...
Oh, yeah. You were a hard worker.
Like, responsible, practical.
Oh, so
and
good.
Then you've got your parents in your ear like, okay, like, after college, you're going to get a job and you need to be in a good industry and do... You know, do all the things that can result in you surviving and thriving as an adult, right?
Sure.
So graduated from college early, moved abroad, actually moved to Denmark and taught at a university in Denmark and came back to the States and just jumped into adulting and have always enjoyed the arts, whether it's movies or plays and theater, ballet, dance, etc. But didn't return to it until 2018.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it took a long...
I mean, I don't know how old you are, so I have no, like, reference. That could be, like, 5 years. That could be 10 years. But, I mean, like, it's certainly, like, recent.
It was over 20. How old am I? It was over 15 years.
How old am I? It's okay. You don't have to tell everyone. It's all right. I'm over 37, but my family has a rule where all women just aged at 30, and then you get to 37, that's it.
Right.
Forevermore.
Yes.
My grandmother, who died at, we think, 88, we're not sure, said she was 37 every birthday. So you don't have to tell me. But okay, so wait, you moved to Denmark. I feel like we're glossing over this interesting adventure. Mm-hmm. You went to Denmark to teach. What'd you teach? Business?
I taught intercultural communication to business students.
Oh.
So teaching them how to. So if you have a meeting with someone from Japan or Mexico or Poland, what are the international and cultural expectations for interacting with those people?
Oh, wow.
So basically how to not screw it up and come in there and be unintentionally offensive.
Right.
When there are cultural dynamics at play.
Was that part of what you studied in school, that you like had this knowledge of all sorts of different cultures and like the proper way to like, because it sounds mostly just about like saying hello and getting the business started, because business, once you start talking, is pretty much the same, I want to assume. But I mean, it's kind of like how to reference things and what they mean. They say this, they really mean that or whatever. How do you know the breadth of that information?
So I was a business major, but I also have a degree in interpersonal communication. So
like a psychology thing or a sociology thing?
No, it really fits under the communication umbrella.
Interesting.
So understanding how people communicate, the relationships, context, and then culturally, interculturally, what that looks like.
Yeah. How would you not work for the CIA right now? I mean,
because I'm too tender-hearted. I would be like, I would be crying all the time. Like, I would go to a crime scene and see something and just like.
Well, not everyone that works at the CIA spends time at crime scenes. There's a lot of just offices, you know, where people are advising you. You know, you need to wear gloves when you go meet this guy. Oh. I'm sure there's a whole group that teaches a class at Quantico to the people who go out there to be spies to know this kind of stuff. I'm telling you, you could work for the CIA. Listen, I know you're listening. Eventually, when this comes out, just give her a call. She'd be good at it, is all I'm saying.
Or I could play an actor, you know, play a role that
who's
is.
Who's in the CIA? No, but that's fake CIA. Come on. You got the real skills. You're like legit. You're not just like, maybe she can speak in a few languages even though she doesn't know what she's saying. Actor. You're like legit businesswoman who like knows how to do this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's so wild. So how long you taught in Denmark for a year?
Mm-hmm.
And you focused on this, but when you finished, you were like, no way? Or did you move? You said when you came back to do adulting, does that mean that you like worked for a firm that like did this kind of stuff? What was the business job that you had?
I ended up getting into medical supply sales.
Medical supply
sales. So came back and, you know, had this undergraduate degree, had just spent a year abroad. I was trying to figure it out because even though you have a business degree, it's like, okay, but you're like 21, 22. You don't really have any skills.
Yeah.
So went through that whole process of applying for jobs and like most things, it all boils down to who you know. So, you know, my father had a relationship with, you know, one of the guys at this company and went and did the interview and ended up working for them. And that took me all over the Midwest. But just to like have your first post-college job, first like apartment that's like in your name, like all of the things that come with being a young adult and buying furniture and like paying bills and balancing like what it's like to have, you know, thousands of dollars deposited in your account every 2 months and not spend it all. And like, you know, like learning how to be an adult. So I did that for a couple of years, and
that's probably very smart to spend time. I don't know at the time that you were acknowledged that that's what you were doing, but I feel like that life lessons are so important for like no matter what your job is, what your career is. If you can learn how to like maintain a job and pay rent and like exist in with all the juggling of that. Okay, then you can do whatever you want after that. You just have to learn how to do the juggling.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So wild. But you also got to travel, so that's not crazy.
Yeah.
So that was nice. It felt secure, but sounds like it wasn't really scratching the itch that you were looking for.
So try as I might, and I didn't discover this about myself or really have the vocabulary to articulate what this quality but I'm an introvert. So an introvert doing a sales job, an outside sales job, going into hospitals, bringing baked goods, having conversations with surgeons and the head of nursing, is very overwhelming. And I hate being hard. Like I hate hard closing. I hate the hard sale of, all right, Amy, so are you ready to buy today? Like, that's just not me. Like, let's go to lunch. Tell me about your life and your family, and we build rapport. And then I drop some nuggets of why I want to spend time with you, but really want to invest in the relationship. And that doesn't really work when you do sales, at least this type of sales. There are some relationships that are longer-term sales relationships, but...
Yeah, but I feel like they're in, like... much more evil possible,
right?
You know, fields.
Right.
It's like money investment. Sure, you'd probably be best friends with everybody who's investing with you, but you'd also kind of be terrible in a way.
Right.
Like, you'd know things you probably wouldn't want to know.
Yeah.
Like that CIA crime scene you don't want to look at. Nobody really wants to know what's inside the ledger.
Right. So really struggled to...
Yeah, tough as an introvert.
...meet this, like, monthly quota and come in, okay, Amy, do you want to buy a case of gloves? Like, it's just... It wasn't me, like, authentically me. So I struggled in that role.
Yeah.
Did it for a couple of years. And then decided, so at the time I was living in St. Louis, decided that I really wanted to go back to Arizona because I'd, you know, gone to college there, the sun shines every day, mountains. It's far better than St. Louis.
Sure.
So I went back home to Kansas City and kind of found some little odd jobs to kind of keep me occupied and semi-adulting. I mean, living at home, you're not paying rent, etc. So
sure,
offered me a little bit more freedom, but finally was like, all right, I'm going to take the leap and go back to Arizona and figure out life once I get there. And packed up my stuff, and my dad and I drove back to Phoenix and stayed with a family friend until I got on my feet and worked at a university. And I would hop back and forth career-wise between working in education and working in sales. Even though I knew sales was not my thing, I knew it. It's what I'd done. It was on my resume.
Yeah. Once it's what you build up, it's really hard to get away from it.
Right.
That's the hardest part about certain, like, day jobs.
Yeah.
I say day jobs in clearly a negative way, but you know what I mean? Like, if you want to be doing something, but you have this skill to be doing something else and it makes money, then it's really hard. It's like people who work in restaurants.
Yeah.
It's like they cannot get out.
Right.
Because it just holds you back with the money.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you like some money?
Right.
You're like, I do like money.
Absolutely.
I could do this.
I can use the money to do the things. Yes.
What's the education part at this point? I do enjoy that you have, you know, had a path of teaching as well. There's something interesting about that, especially given your revelation of being an introvert. Mm-hmm. Teaching is not introverted.
No.
Teaching's quite.
But it's still relational. So,
I see.
When I was at my first stint in the university setting, I was a counselor, so an academic counselor. So helping people through their journeys and helping them troubleshoot the time barriers and life barriers that happen.
Oh, that sounds nice.
You know, when you're pursuing a goal. So I did that for 3 years. But it was far more relational than sales.
Yeah.
And then hit this wall where I wasn't progressing promotion-wise the way that I wanted to. Not for a lack of trying, just culturally, just wasn't working. So I'm like, okay, I gotta go. Like, I need to go somewhere where I can grow and I can thrive. And so one of my classmates in graduate school was working for this tech company. And he's like, you should come over and run this side of our division. This is our specialized product. And I was like, okay.
And so, wait, when did you go to grad school?
2008, 2009.
But like in this journey, so you went back to Phoenix, you're staying with a friend, you're working some sales jobs, you're doing some education jobs. Did you get into grad school because of the education jobs?
Yes.
Were you like out of school and they were like, also you could take classes?
Yes.
And you're like, I like classes.
Yes.
Oh, okay, great. So you're like going to graduate school. More business?
More business.
Ah, you're so businessy.
MBA, yeah.
Are you doing this because... Did you go to grad school for business because you really wanted to, or was it still the pull of the responsibility and practical?
Yes, very much the latter. Okay, you have an undergrad degree, that's not enough.
Yeah.
Now you need to do something else. And I know it, I can do it. But at the time, the mid-20s version of myself, it was like, well, what else are you going to do?
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was what everyone was doing. Everyone was getting an MBA. So if you weren't getting an MBA, it was like
everyone was getting.
I'm serious. I'm so serious. And now MBAs are a dime a dozen. It's like, okay, well, that's not enough. So what else do you do? What other tricks do you have?
I don't think there's anything else. I mean, other than just being, once you get a PhD, aren't you like defunct? Like once you get to that level, you're no longer, you've moved past the active work stage in your life. And now you're just reflecting upon active work. Like that's when you get a PhD is when you should just get a smoking jacket and sit and just discuss what it's like to live a life.
Basically,
like,
yes.
I feel like, you know. Yeah, MBA feels like there should be some sort of action to it. Like that there should be, you know, it's like, it makes me think of all those movies about people doing trading floors. Like that as soon as you graduate, you walk into a room and they're like, come here, you do this, you do that, you do this. And you're like, okay.
Yeah. No, that was not my
experience. It's not because as exciting.
Everyone had one. So it's like, okay, you have one too. Great. What else do you do? What other tricks do you do?
Yeah. Yeah. And at that point, I think that's why right now in the world, like this idea of like, maybe college isn't for everyone.
Oh, for sure.
Because for a long time, people were just
this
like,
is the expectation.
Just yes. doing college, yeah. thinking that was going to do something. And yeah. it's like, no, no, that's just education. You then have to figure out what to do with that.
After yeah. you amass all of the debt.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
And you better have had that year that you had where you learned how to adult in between. Because if you have all this debt, they don't love that.
No.
It doesn't help you with no. your life. So what happened to you after that? Like, so you went to the grad school and then you got this job.
So went to grad school, expected there to be some sort of upward trajectory career-wise, and that did not happen. So then I had to go because there's always been this part of me that's striving to do more or know that has always known that I have this great potential. Mm-hmm. But stagnation is my kryptonite. Like if mm-hmm. if I've been doing the same thing, if I'm trying to grow, if I'm trying to learn and it's not happening, then I have to pivot. So me leaving the university post MBA was my way of trying to do that. So I went back to what I knew, which was sales. And yet again, was miserable because that's not me.
Yeah.
And there were relationship components, but there's a part of the hard close that feels really inauthentic to me. Mm-hmm. And I've always struggled with being able to do that.
Yeah.
Because you're really chasing your quota. You're chasing a number. And I can't say to you, if you're my boss, like, sorry, you know, I didn't meet my number again, because as the organization is counting on you to meet your metric, which feeds into an overall plan that they have for the quarter, which feeds into the yearly plan and projections that they've told the board. So it did not suit me.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of intense stuff about sales and even being a person who's always, I've been always theater forever and ever.
Yeah.
But people have always tried to tell me to be in sales. They're like, yeah, you'd be great.
You're
like,
very personable, so. But that doesn't mean that you should sell yeah, things to people.
It doesn't mean, yeah.
yeah.
I don't want to use this particular skill for that for that evil or whatever.
Right.
I mean, I know everyone's going to buy stuff, but
yeah.
I'm like, it's like when they say, you know, let's make a viral video. It's like, you literally don't know what people are going to react to something.
Right.
Like whether it's a product or it's, you know, a service of some kind. Mm-hmm. Like, you just don't know. Maybe they're going to buy a million of it and you don't have to worry about it because mm-hmm. they want it. They with a capital T.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, if you're pushing sales, it's like, come on, man.
Yeah.
What is this person doing that wouldn't require you to have to push? But everything is like that. I mean, I've done tons of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. People are always like, yeah, you should do this. And I'd work for a company and be like, what is this?
Right.
I do not want it.
And they sell it to you, and it sounds really great. And
sure, because they're good at selling.
And then you get in there, and you're like, wait, what?
Can I just tell you that when I first moved to town, I was working at, like, a print company mm-hmm. about sales, and they legitimately, how long ago was this? I guess it had to have been CDs. I had a CD player in my car. The, like, sales manager gave me this, like, CDs of this guy doing, like, speeches on sales. And I, like, listened to, like, 8 CDs of this guy giving speeches, thinking that I could learn how to be a salesperson from listening to this guy. And I was just like, I learned that I did not want to be doing sales.
Yes, there was a stint in our culture where it was the extroverts trying to teach the introverts how to be extroverts.
Yeah.
And they made tons of money because I think people thought that they wanted to be what they saw in these,
sure.
you know, Zig Ziglars and other big names.
Plus, it seems like they're like, I'm
happy,
a millionaire.
And popular,
would you like to be
and
a
successful?
Millionaire?
Right.
Yeah.
But if that's not who you are,
right?
You can try. You can listen to all the CDs and you read all the books and take all the seminars. But when it comes down to that moment in time in which you have to act and do the thing,
yeah.
Whether it's make the phone call or go and sell a case of gloves, there's something that won't let you do it because it's just really hard.
So at what point in your journey of this did you realize, because you've mentioned a few times that you like prefer building relationships. Have you always known that, or was that like a revelation at some point where you're like, okay, I can't keep doing this, but what's a part of what I've learned that I can take to a different industry? And it feels like developing relationships is the thing that you really prefer to do. It's like the part of sales you're into. Mm-hmm. So then you were like, let me see where I can put this. Mm-hmm. How did you figure that out for yourself?
I didn't realize it until the second stint in sales. Mm-hmm. And I consider myself to be fairly reflective. So really sitting down and identifying, like, what is the struggle? Like, why is this so hard for you? Because you can do anything, but why is this thing so hard for you? Mm-hmm. And just like reading and listening and watching and all of those like self-help reflective, you know, topics and things that are now super popular, but then, you know, 10, 15 years ago, they were just beginning. But learning more about myself and reflecting on the things that I'd heard or read to better find the words. And in that time, in this I, you know, past 10 years where introversion, extroversion is something that everyone's talking about or can identify to further explain their behavior. So, yeah.
Hmm. So you found that you liked developing relationships with people. At what point were you able to transition your skills and experience and breadth of education to another industry that let you use that skill?
It wasn't until last year, honestly. So after the second sales job, went back into education again, because again, that's what I knew.
And more helping people. Developing relationships in that way.
Yes.
You got to do what you wanted, but in a different way.
Yes. Yeah. And it didn't involve selling.
Yeah.
It allowed me to build relationships. So I did that for just shy of 5 years. And with each passing year, became more and more miserable. And
sure.
In 2018 was like, I need something creative, which is how I got back into acting.
Was it just like a funsy exercise or like a one-time workshop that got you into it?
I went to a casting call because my original goal was just to get into fitness modeling and print modeling. And go to a casting call and they say, you know, go take this workshop, commercial workshop, because Austin's a commercial market. So I go and do that and sign up for more classes because obviously I was rusty. You put a camera in front of someone and they get all weird. So very rusty. So I'm like, okay, sure, I can commit to going to an acting class once a week. And began the process of becoming an artist or reevaluating how I identified as an artist. And initially, my goal was to just do commercials, like do a Colgate commercial. And then that desire turned into, oh, well, you know, maybe I could do like television or film or some other projects like that. And it just continues to evolve the more and more you kind of discover about yourself as an artist.
And I personally think the more you like realize there are different kinds of jobs and different kinds of roles you could have. Like, I'm like, wait, you can do that? Mm-hmm. I want to do that.
Right.
You know, every time I hear about a new thing, I'm like, I didn't know I could be that person. Let me do that thing.
Yeah. So returned to acting in 2018, was still working at the second university, and found myself really enjoying acting, really enjoying fitness, not liking this university job, and wanting to make a change. And I'd started my fitness business 5 years earlier as a result of having lost weight. So my passion was health and fitness.
So there was 2013 when you started the fitness business?
2015.
So what do you call it? Was that during the time that you're counseling at the college?
No. So I was back at the, I was at the tech company in the second sales job. I had gained weight. So I was unhappy at the university in the sales job. So I was eating my feelings and had gained weight. Mm-hmm. And then left the second sales job mm-hmm. without having another job. Like I was so unhappy, I had to leave.
Yeah.
Because I was so depressed and just miserable. So for about 4 months, which was kind of sleeping all day and hanging out and eating.
Yeah.
And then got the second university job and decided as I was picking out my outfits for the first day of work that I was going to address the issue, which was my relationship with food. And I gave up pizza and French fries for 90 days and I lost 10 pounds. So I was like, well, if everything else has remained the same, what will happen if I actually like pay attention to what I'm eating? And began to prepare my own foods and learn more about food and lost another 40 pounds as an extension of doing that. And then was able to share my weight loss story in some health and fitness magazines.
Oh, great.
Which led to doing like a media circuit for television and radio.
Oh.
And when you go on TV, they're like, okay, what are your tips? And so I was giving these tips to people, realizing that I actually enjoyed giving this advice on healthy living and things that worked for me. And as a result of that, that's when the fitness business began.
Wow. As a introvert, how did the media circuit do? I mean, was it
It's
okay
not as bad because, as it sounds yeah, because when you're on set, when you're, I mean, television, it's a super small space. There's one other person with you and the cameraman and that's it. Oh, so there's only like three intimate people. In the, right. It's super intimate and everyone's super nice. So it's fine.
Yeah. I suppose they're not interviewing you because you murdered somebody. They're right. interviewing you to be like, oh my God, such right. a good job.
Right. Less
they're
intense.
Like, I would love to do this. Tell me how to do it.
Yes.
So then you have a general positivity to you. Your vibe is very positive. It makes sense that people would receive, you know, mm-hmm. the things that you were saying well.
Right.
You know, because generally everyone wants to give advice, but some people are great and you're like, I want to hear it.
Right.
And some people you're like, forget that guy. I don't care what he says. So you just have a good demeanor that like makes people go like, I'm going to listen to what she says, you know? but that's really fascinating. Like you, that this took you on a path. Are you still, so during this media circuit, where do you work?
I'm still at the university.
You're working at the university, going on TV, talking about this thing. This is so crazy.
Every day. Like, so one of my good friends was the former like face of the Phoenix Police Department. So he had all of these media connections. So the day before the magazine came out, it was a Shape magazine, the day before it came out, he sends an email and it was like, hey, my friend's going to be in this magazine talking about her weight loss. You know, if you want to reach out to her to interview her, here's her contact info. And all of them said yes. So for like a week, it was just news crew after news crew after interview after radio thing. Like, it was super cool. Like, one time we went to like the gym and they like interviewed me doing a workout, like all of these things for wow. like a week. And it was so fun. I mean, when you lose weight, it's super cool. When you have, you know, when you've regained your confidence and are feeling good about yourself and feeling good in your skin, that feels great. But also to know that, I mean, weight loss, body image are things that we all deal with on some form or another, right? So just to be able to give someone one nugget that could potentially help them or encourage them was very fulfilling. It is very fulfilling, I should say.
So you started doing that and that you liked that so much, you turned it into your own business?
Yes. Yes.
So that right after that, you were helping other people as what is it? Fitness instructor?
Personal trainer. But yeah, so working at the university, starting this fitness business and getting that off the ground and doing all of the solopreneur stuff. So building my own website and getting everything situated with the state and learning about marketing and setting up Facebook pages and all the stuff that
Do you have to get a license to be a personal trainer, or was it setting up with the state to own a business?
Certified as a trainer and then getting squared away with the state. Yeah.
God bless you for doing all the right things. See, that's what your business degree is going to save you in. You're going to do all the right things with your own businesses. Yes. And then no one's ever going to be like, hey, you forgot to do this. You're right. Going to jail. You're right. Like, I've got all my paperwork. Yes. It's ready.
Yes. I'm registered.
Yeah.
I'm registered.
That's so great.
So, became a personal trainer.
You're so
but
legit.
Then I try. You know, I am a business person.
You really do. You're so on point. So you start the personal trainer business.
And I'm still at the university.
Yeah, which is in Phoenix?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I'm finding more joy and more passion with all things fitness and less joy with doing education stuff. And then one afternoon, after being in Arizona for over a decade, I decide that I'm ready to leave. Like, I had always imagined that Arizona would be my forever home just because the weather's perfect and the sun shines every day. And
is it nice there?
Yes, it's beautiful.
Great.
But my heart was like, let's go on another adventure.
Yeah.
So I looked at a map and wanted to go someplace that was good for young professionals and had decent weather. And that narrowed it down to Austin or Nashville.
Yeah, I was going to be like, where's the other place?
Right. Austin or Nashville. And talked to some friends and reflected and decided that Austin was it. And had never been here, but was pretty confident that I was going to move here. And it's funny how, like, when you make a decision or you're thinking about something, like, the universe just kind of, like, affirms your decision.
Yeah.
So right after I decided that I was moving to Austin, for the first and only time, I started seeing commercials for the state of Texas. Like the week that I decided, like, okay, I'm going to move to Austin. I'm like, you know, in bed and just see these commercials, like, come to Texas, like, all this stuff. And they're like videos of UT and Longhorns and all these things. And I'm like, I have never in all my life seen a commercial for the state of Texas.
I didn't know Texas had tourism videos that they're sending to Arizona.
Right?
Right. I mean, I guess I've seen them for other states.
Yeah.
Where it's like, go to Arkansas. And I'm like, huh, they made that video.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I'm like, okay, universe, I hear you. I'm going to Texas. And I sat on that decision and kind of paused my life for 2 years because I was scared.
Sure.
So I had to sell a house, go to a place that I'd never been before and start over. And I had started over before when I was doing the medical supply sales and moving to Denmark. And so I'm used to creating new lives and building more, you know, friends and building community. But this seemed like a bigger leap because it involved selling a house, right? So
God bless you for buying a house when you're in Arizona.
So finally got to a point where, like, okay, I'm going to put the house on the market. I'll just take my time and casually transition to Austin. I was working from home, so, you know, I was able to transfer states and it wasn't a thing. Still at the university. Put the house on the market on a Friday. It sold on Sunday.
Whoa. What a market over there.
And so I was like, okay, I'm going to Texas. So after the house sold and was under contract, came to Austin for the first time in January of 2019 for a long weekend with my mom. And I was like, I need to find a place to live. So mom's like, okay, I'll meet you in Austin. So we came for a weekend and looked at houses and condos and apartments 2 days straight. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to find a place. Like, I'm going to have to put my stuff in storage because I'm going from a 4-bedroom house to like a 2-bedroom apartment, which you have a lot of grown up things, right? You have all the furniture and the china cabinets and all of these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the last place we ended up looking at was the place that I ended up getting. And one of my contingencies and my kind of test to, you know, confirm that this is what I was supposed to, this is the move I was supposed to make. I was like, Austin's more expensive than Phoenix. I cannot justify living in an apartment that's more than my mortgage. So that was my financial, I was like, it has to be less than my mortgage. And the place that I ended up getting was $2 below my mortgage.
But not a 4-bedroom house, I bet.
Nope, 2-bedroom, 2-bath. But It's a very spacious different place, considering. Yeah. But $2 under what I'd said.
Isn't that crazy?
So it worked. It worked.
Wow.
And moved here.
$2. Your mom's like, okay, is that enough? And you're like, yes, it is. And she's like, okay. Sounds fine, dear.
And
she goes home. Do you know how expensive Austin is?
Yeah.
We can never visit her.
They visit all the time.
I'm sure. It's just, Austin, like the idea of the transition from place to place, like the fact that Arizona allowed you to have such a, like a big house for what it costs to get a 2-bedroom apartment here is just kind of a wild thing.
It's crazy, huh?
And the fact that you like still did it. You were like, yeah, you weren't like, let's get back to Arizona.
Yeah. I was up for the adventure, you made the move. I felt like it was a good choice.
Now at this point, you've got a successful fitness business going on. And you have been taking these acting classes and doing fitness modeling and some acting in Arizona for a little bit?
No. I didn't start acting until I got back.
Because you said that you went to a casting call in 2018 and then you didn't move to Austin until 2019. So I thought maybe
I moved
you
here
were
in
2018.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. January 2018.
But I didn't make the career change. We're looping back to your original question.
Sure.
Until January of 19.
Oh, so you were still working for the university for like the first year you lived here. Oh, it seems so weird that you'd be able to like work from home counseling.
Well,
just chat with people on the phone?
So the second stint at the university, I was not a counselor.
Oh.
I was an assistant dean. Assistant dean.
Another unusual job to be able to be remote for.
Yeah. Assistant dean. It was an online school.
Oh, so, well, okay.
Yes. Connecting the dots.
Yeah.
Now it's making sense.
I was like, there's human beings that need to talk to an assistant dean and you're not there.
Yeah.
But now it makes sense. Yes. You're like helping the whole thing get run. I bet you assistant dean is actually a really good job based on the like work experience and schooling that you have, like sort of the cumulative put together, like assistant dean seems like logically right.
Yeah.
So wow.
It allows the relationship building. It allows, all of the things I learned from all of the years in business and, but in a leadership position.
Able to help people individually and yet also see the big picture of the business running and man, that's interesting. I'm sorry that it didn't like fulfill you deeply because like on paper it would seem to be your total like right job.
Yeah.
It's so fascinating how just reflecting personally on the idea that like there probably are a number of things that on paper each one of
us
could do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. I could be this, based on the experiences I have, I could do this. Do I want to? Is that something that like fulfills my soul? No, no, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you finally let go this practicality, as it were, in like 2019. And have you been full-time personal trainer and actor for the past year?
Yes.
Wow, how's it been? I mean, because you're so responsible and practical, and I mean that in the best, most like positive way. Like, how are you handling that?
So, arguably the best decision, top three best decisions I've ever made. I think
top three
for sure. and it's because you go to school, you get the first degree, you get the second degree, you do all the things that you think that you're supposed to do because this is what you studied. This is what's expected of you because you need to make money and do all these things. But like, I feel like for the average person or most people, they hate what they do. Like they hate their jobs. They hate either driving into work or, traveling all the time and going to the meetings and dealing with people that also hate what they do. And it's this 40 plus hours of commitment to something that is killing your soul. So in December of 18 to January of 19, I had some really hard conversations with myself about, is this the life that you want to be living? You're in your mid-30s, you're unhappy, you've moved to a new place that brings you great joy, you know what your passions are, you know what makes you happy, Why are you not doing those things? So a lot of like conversations in the shower about, you know, I would be looking for jobs, and I found this one request for a speaker to give a talk about weight loss and setting goals and New Year's resolutions. And I, as I was reading it, I was like, oh, this would be perfect for me. And then I was like, but I'm not going to submit for it. So I'm like in the shower talking to myself, like, okay, why are you not going to submit for it? Because I'm scared. What are you afraid of? What are you scared of? I don't know. Okay. You can be afraid. You can feel the fear. But you should probably do it anyway. Which was the beginning of this whole year of feeling the fear and doing it anyway. Because I knew that if I took this leap in January to pursue fitness and to pursue acting and just see what happened, I have this safety net of years of business experience. I've got the 2 degrees. I've got the certifications.
Right.
There is this massive safety net for me to fall back on. But I'm in this phase where when I'm 95, reflecting on my life, do I want to say, oh, I committed 30, 40, 50 years to a career that killed my soul? Or do I want to say, for this period of time, I bet on myself and I took this leap and I did this thing. And the worst thing did not happen. What ended up happening was I thrived and I grew and everything worked itself out. But that was the version of my life that I wanted to be most proud of.
Yeah.
And here we are.
I'm glad that you found that this past year has been formative in a good way, because there's a lot of growing pains to, you know, transitions in life. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the first year isn't the most fun year. Yeah. So I'm really glad that like things have really fallen into place to show you that this is the right path for you.
Right. And it's trusting that when you make a decision, and if you honestly in your soul feel like it's the right decision and the right path to take, you have to trust and believe that everything will work out. Like if you're looking for something to fail, it will fail. If you're looking for flaws, you will find them.
Yeah.
But if your heart is open and your mind is open and you're like, you know what? I'm not sure what's going to happen today. I've got these things to do. I'm just going to see what happens. And when you have that attitude, it changes things.
Yeah.
Like tremendously it changes things. Also knowing that you still have a safety net if you need it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice to have a good sort of like base around you. And also like realistically, like your safety net doesn't necessarily have to be. And in my mind, I'm imagining a person listening to this being like, well, I don't have money in the bank or whatever. It's like, listen, safety nets are not always just money or knowing that your family's around to bail you out if you need to. Sometimes safety net is just believing in yourself.
It is. And it's believing that the skills that you have amassed, mm-hmm. the knowledge that you have, is enough to get you through this next chapter.
Yes.
Because we do all of these things, whether it's school or certifications or classes, whatever, and we collect this knowledge. And then when you're asked to like put it to the test, or apply it in a unique way, we suddenly like forget that we have all of these things.
So much.
We do it all the time.
It happens to people even as they get older. Like yeah. anybody, like whenever I talk to people that are like over 50 who mm-hmm. are like not sure, I'm like, do you know how much life experience you have?
Right.
You have handled lots of things.
Right.
Like even if it was just, and people be like, oh, well, I just stayed home with the kids and took care of the... Okay, cool. So you're a manager.
You, yeah.
Okay.
Manager, you can a project manager.
Delegation, you know.
Chief operation.
Were you in charge of paying yeah. the bills too? Right. Cool. You're an accountant.
Yep.
Like,
right.
Yeah. You have all these skills just right. in life.
Right.
Like, and that's the other hard part about like real life. Like for a lot of people who go to college and don't like, I don't know, learn stuff.
Sure.
Because college can be practice adulthood, but it can be practice adulthood in a let's party all day kind of way. Mm-hmm. And it can be practice adulthood like, okay, mm-hmm. I have learned what happens when you don't pay your rent. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. I have learned that my phone gets turned off if I don't pay it. Mm-hmm. I've learned I have to go to this job at the shoe store mm-hmm. so that I can pay for these things. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the basic things of life that most people wait until after college to do, and then they're in anywhere USA going like, I hate this job at this call center or wherever they could get a job, and they're just like, I don't know how to get out of this situation.
Yeah,
I mean, I think a lot of, not only are you quite positive and clearly responsible and practical, but the like the confidence that you seem to have in your own abilities is great. And I like wish that for everyone, that they could like see how they can handle it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I like that. In fact, you're empowering me. Like, I'm like, yeah, you're right. I can handle it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think that you mentioned that you're in your mid-30s. I'm in my early 40s, right? So we're not too far apart. And I remember just a few years ago being very, like, wisdom-giving, like you kind of are right now. And I'm like, I feel like when you get to... All right, it's coming in. I haven't done this in a while, audience. Strap in. I have a theory of life.
Oh, okay.
I have a theory of life that you become new people every 18 years. That you get...
18?
That you get like a full 18-year like journey of your life. And then when you finish that journey, you're not that person before. You're the beginning of a new person, right? So 0 to 18, you're your parents' kid.
Yes.
You do what they say. You live where they say to live. You do what they tell you to do.
Yeah.
You learn whatever it is that they provide in front of you and whatever things happen in your immediate vicinity. And they're pretty much the final say on most decisions that are happening. Near the end of that, you're very much trying to get out of that situation. And you're like, leave me alone. I can take care of myself. And they're like, I'm not sure. But it turns out you can, because at 18, you become new you.
Right.
And you have to take care of yourself now. And you have to figure it out. And from 18 to 36, you have to figure out all of these things that we've been talking about. Like how to amass skills, how to like have pitfalls and not let them kill you.
Yes.
Like how to make friends with enough people that like you feel like you're speaking to human beings and not just the internet.
Yes.
Like just various different things that you have to learn throughout your life. But then after 36, that's another 18 years. At 36, you've got a new journey. And this is where a lot of times people get divorced. Mm-hmm. They change their careers intensely. They do like wild, crazy thing. You know, they have $1 million, so they buy a sports car that they then crash. You know, like you're like, hey, guys, how about instead of going wild? Because they're 18 again. Like you would not, if an 18-year-old crashed a car, you'd be like, oh, well, that kid, he'll learn because he will,
maybe.
But if he hasn't and he's, you know, 39 and he crashes a car, we're not going to be as forgiving because he's had a lot of years. So you're like, God, that guy. But really, mentally, he's 18 again.
Yeah.
He's figuring himself out again. He's been something. He did it. Good. I accomplished my task. But really, what am I? Right. And a part of me feels like this is sort of where you're at.
Yeah,
like
that's fair.
Because... Yeah. Because once you, from 18 to 36, so many of us, and I learned this not only from like just teaching people, but like doing these interviews, we are all just responsibility and practicality.
Yeah.
We're like, what is the right thing to do? What should I do?
Mm-hmm.
You're building your own life based on these previous ideals that your parents gave you.
Uh-huh.
But after 36, a lot of those things have darkened. Right. You've realized that maybe what worked for your dad doesn't work for you. That maybe the way that they dealt with life in the 60s and 70s isn't how I can handle the life in the 2010s, right? So, like, now 2020. And so I posit, and we live so much longer. Like, we're not, nobody's dying at 60.
Right?
Well, I mean whatever.
Some people,
you know, some people are. But you know what I mean? Like in general, we're making it, the people are making it to 100.
Mm-hmm.
That's a couple more cycles.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be a few more people and you have to like let that happen. And you have to let happen the crumble part, the part where you're like, well, I don't know what to, I mean, is anyone who's a freshman in college going to tell you what their late 30s are going to be like? No, they don't have any idea.
They think they do.
Of course they think they know. We all think we know throughout our entire journeys.
Yes.
When you were a little kid, didn't you like tell your parents what you were going to be somehow? And it was like, yeah, sure. Maybe when you're 18, you'll do that. You know, whatever that might be that you imagine that you do. But anyway, I just think that there's like new transitions and like, it's great that you are starting on this new journey because your next like cycle will be you fulfilling this for yourself. And I wish that more people who had an 18 to 36 like steep in responsibility could find their creative bliss, could find what they want to do in that second, in that third round, you know, 36 to what, 54. And like, however that means, that's like, you're, you get to be you now. You figured out how to do the world. Now you really get to be you. After 54, one hopes you've amassed a small amount of cash so you can then go live on an island or buy that house in Vermont or whatever, like, you know, thing that you want to do. Like people say, though, I suppose your 50s isn't exactly like the end of your life. You still have another one. 54 to, math is so hard, 72, right? My mom's just, don't tell her I told you. Sorry, audience, you know how old she is. She's about to be 72 in June. It'll be the end of this new journey of hers. And she'll start a new one. She
probably has like at least 20 more years in her too.
Oh, yeah. No, she's a party girl, hardcore. Yeah. She has more excitement in her life than both of us combined. I can guarantee you.
I believe
you.
That.
Yeah. No, but you know, you get to a point where your life changes. You don't have kids. You know, she doesn't have kids around her anymore. Right. My father has passed away. Yeah. She just goes out and does her things and like goes to her political meetings and then goes and has dinner with her friends. Like, that's life.
Yes.
You know? But she earned it doing the things we're talking about now. Yeah. During her 36 to 54, she was, you know, building her career that she now lives off of, right? Mm-hmm. In the same way that you have this new thing. So tell me a little bit more about what your life is now. What is the activities that you're involved in? Like, how, what is being a personal trainer day to day? What is the like acting scene of Austin been like for you?
So fitness and acting is a perfect marriage because both of them are have non-traditional schedules. So as a trainer, I train my earliest client at 5:30 a.m. and then I'm done around 10 and have 10 to about 4 to do acting stuff, whether that's work on the scene or submit for an audition or go to an audition or go on set, depending on how the day is structured. And then my 4:30 to 7:30 is back training my after work crew. And then of course, weekend, my weekend warriors for fitness stuff. But it's all sandwiched in together and acting. I mean, Austin is a commercial market, so there are lots of commercials happening here because there are more authentic looking people here. So people in LA don't look like people in
the world.
In, you know, Oklahoma. People in New York, they might, but ultimately people come here to find the average guy to be in the Ford commercial, right? So it's a commercial market, but there are other short films and feature films that are filmed here.
I am always suspicious sometimes of people that are like way too attractive. Like, I'm like, what's happening here?
Right. Like this is a Doritos commercial. Like this doesn't look like someone that would really be eating Doritos.
You're right. Right?
Like, but generally they cast Doritos, the people that like the guy that sits next to you at the call center, the guy with the big beard and the glasses. And you're like, he looks like an average person.
Yeah.
And that resonates with the consumers of Doritos. Right?
It's true. That's exactly who I'm imagining eating Doritos. Right? And if I saw him eating it, I would eat more Doritos.
Right. You'd be like, that seems authentic.
That's fascinating. Now, your point of view on like how the casting works, is this built out of just the experiences that you've had? Or like, do you have a good agent? Or was it the commercial workshop that helped frame your view of Austin acting?
I have an agent, but it's also experience and listening. I mean, acting is listening, but it's picking up information from other people that have been in the industry. And ultimately, it boils down to you have a project, you want to do a commercial or a film, and someone has taken the time to create the story, and now they need to find people that fit the story. And so you go on these auditions and you do your best version of the little snippet of info that they've given you. And if you fit what they're looking for, or you surprise them with something new that they didn't know that they wanted, then you get the part. And I think what happens for most actors is they get discouraged because they're going on audition auditions over and over and over again, and they're not booking work. But if you change your perspective and think of yourself as, you know, from the writer's point of view and from the producer's point of view, it's if you need someone that has a particular trait or quirk or whatever, and you don't have that, it doesn't mean you're not a good actor.
Hmm.
It just means that they are looking for something specific.
Yeah.
If I tell you I want Funfetti cupcakes and you give me a chocolate cake, the chocolate cake could be amazing, but what I want is Funfetti cupcakes.
Right.
Which are always welcome, by the way. Down with the Funfetti cupcakes.
I see. That's a cheat for the personal trainer. Mm-hmm. I like it. Yeah. I like it. That seems fun.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to do it, why not be Festo?
Right.
Have you gone on a lot of auditions since you've started?
Yeah. And I mean, week to week, it's different. So some weeks, there'll be like 2. Other weeks, there'll be 8.
Huh.
The industry is leveraging technology. So sometimes, you know, you could just do a video submission.
Yeah.
So just get your iPhone, get your lights, backdrop, submit it, edit it, and email it to them.
I heard a tip on one of the like Austin actors Facebook pages to use to like rent a room in a library, because it'll be quiet with a blank backdrop. So you don't even have to have a backdrop. You just bring your camera there and you have a quiet place to do your scene. And it's a blank canvas behind you, because all the walls are just whatever, single color.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, nice.
Or
like if your apartment isn't set up for it, or if you don't, you know.
Well, I mean, the money that you spend renting library space.
Oh, no, it's free.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you can get everything off Amazon.
Oh,
and
totally.
You can write it off.
I mean,
off
if you're more
taxes.
Comfortable in your own home,
yeah.
For sure. But I mean, like, there's
someone
so many
that doesn't
people who's
have
got like a dirty home, or like too many neighbors, or like the people who live
space.
Next door to them,
yes.
Who's like playing death metal all the time.
Uh-huh.
Like, my neighbors are constantly, constantly, constantly doing karaoke outside of their homes.
Huh.
And it's not even like young people karaoke. It's like old Mexican men singing ballads of like old, like super loud on outside karaoke machines. So that's when I record, I used to bring people to my home as opposed to here at this theater.
That's too loud.
And it was just too loud. My husband soundproofed the room where we did it, and you can still hear them.
Oh, that's dreadful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's rough. So we're like, okay, I guess not. I mean, I do phone interviews from there because you can't really hear that much, and I keep my volume low because I'm clearly loud. But, you know, it's just wild. You never know what you can have around you. Just saying, there are lots of options for people. Like, every time you're saying something that's good, I hear the voice of the person who's trying to get out of it. Well, you know, but I can't do that because it. No, you can.
Yeah.
Because
free
it doesn't
space
matter. It's available there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you take a class at like an improv theater like this, you just contact them and you can rent the space for them for very cheap.
Or
like
develop relationships with your classmates and have them be your reading partners.
Yeah.
And some of my classmates come to my place all the time because it's quiet and I have the setup. But
and like help you do your things.
Teamwork.
That's really
makes
great.
The dream work. Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
That's so awesome. Do you think that I have an agent in town and I don't get that many auditions. Now, I'm not really like trying too deeply. So of course there's that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that it helps that you're like out taking workshops, doing scene study? So like your name's in front of potentially more agent-y people in town, or like, also you're younger than me and more beautiful. So there's that. But I like to assume that that's not really the reasoning for casting and whatnot.
So think of the role of an agent. Think of it, they're like the pusher, right? Like, I got Amy. I'm going to try to get Amy out in front of you. I want Amy to book this job.
Yeah.
But if you don't have enough work for a casting director to glean what your skills are or what your range is, it's going to be hard for anyone to say, sign me up.
Right.
Because you know how amazing you are. You know what your strengths are and your skills are. But unless you have a reel or some video that shows that, no one's going to know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one part. I don't think it has to do with, I mean, I think when you take acting classes, it is because you are developing your skill and you're working on developing your skill and you're showing on your resume that you are constantly working on your skill. Which means that you are taking acting serious as a profession. But booking work just, I think, goes back to number one, story and fit. Do you fit what they're looking for? And number two, do they have a good understanding of what your skills are? And do those two things match or complement one another in order to get the job?
Hmm.
So, yeah. So if you, you know, are struggling to get stuff with your agent, then continue to submit for roles, whether they're short films or student projects, to get more content for your reel and seek to do things that show the different versions of who you are. So, mm-hmm. so be the mom, be the doctor, be the psycho, you know, axe murderer, like give them the full range of all of your skills so they can say, oh, okay, you know, I don't have a mom role, but she does a really good psychopath, so let's book her as a serial killer, you know?
Mm. That does sound fun.
And that's something that we're all, I mean, I, you know, I give this advice, but it's something that I'm working on myself now is
sure.
I've played a nurse, I've played a lobbyist, I've played a detective. Now I need to play someone that's a little less together, right? So the hippie friend or the frazzled girlfriend or the ditz or something so I can show casting directors that I can play more than just the put together person.
Mm-hmm. Just watch any police procedural and then all the different possible characters because they have the good people, the bad people, the people who you think did it, but they didn't do it.
Right.
And then the person who really did do it, who's usually famous, so you probably won't play that role.
Not yet.
But what stinks in those procedurals where you're watching it and you're like, oh, well, that famous person's probably the murderer. Mm-hmm. Because he's famous and in the show right now. Mm-hmm. Like, guys, you're giving it away. Like, is that what you want? You want me to just know?
Yeah.
You're not playing this card. You're going to give me a stranger if I don't, if it's supposed to be, I'm not sure who it is.
Yeah.
That's so funny. That's interesting, too. I like the idea of that. I feel like once I got my, I do, you know, I teach improv and sketch, and I have done lots of like comedy stuff, but I don't have a lot of serious things on my reel. So I wonder if I need to put those things together, make more of those things happen.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, most of the time when I get cast for things, and at this point, it's mostly just friends of mine calling me who are like, "Hey, you want to do a thing?" And I'm like, "Yep."
Yeah.
But it's almost always funny.
Yeah.
You know, just because that's what they think
of. Do something serious.
Yeah. Yeah, try something new, be something, show them all the possible things they can find from you.
And give all of the emotion. So find something, do a scene where you're like angry, do a scene where you are crying. Like really show the depth of humanity because that's really what it boils down to is as storytellers, we are portraying humans in the context of the story.
Mm.
But humans feel all of the emotions. They get happy, they're sad, they're angry, they're indifferent, they're confused.
Mm.
So give casting directors an opportunity to see all of those things that you have to offer.
Awesome. Do you, final thing before we sign off this wonderful interview, thank you, by the way, for chatting with me. Do you have any, and you've given me a lot of good advice, but do you have any, like, advice for maybe a person, like, I've been involved a little bit, we've met on set, but for people who are just getting started in Austin, what would you suggest the resources that they check out first to get themselves involved in acting?
Find a really good acting studio. I'm biased, but Carol Hickey Acting Studio is where I train. Phenomenal, phenomenal place. Find a good acting studio and work on your craft, work on your artistry. Acting is no different than any other skill set. And the best example I can give is comparing to sports or an athlete. Like, if you are a professional basketball player, you don't just, like, do it every once in a while. Like, you truly invest. You train. You go to practice. You do the post, you know, workout therapies, et cetera. Like, you eat and sleep and breathe this thing. And acting is no different. So working on your artistry, getting feedback, developing as an artist is an ongoing, lifelong process. There's never a point where you're like, okay, I'm done. So adapt that understanding and mindset right now is that you're always going to be evolving and discovering more about yourself and digging a little deeper in order to really portray this human that's in this story that will be told in the form of a movie. or a television show. So find a good acting studio. Accept the fact that you are always going to be working on your artistry. There are a ton of groups on Facebook that, I mean, if you just like search Austin actor, you're going to get a million different groups. Join those. Ask a ton of questions. Talk to other actors when you're on set or when you're in class.
Don't worry if some of the actors you talk to are a little snotty. That happens sometimes, right. But not everybody is. I would say 90% are nice. But if you get the 10% who are like, oh, is this your first time? then don't worry. Move on to the next person. There's plenty of people there.
And to piggyback off that, I'll say this. And this is one piece of advice I got on the very first shoot that I did. So when it comes to casting, when it comes to projects in general, whether you're in front of the camera or behind the camera, it all boils down to likability. Would I want to have a drink with you at the end of the day? If the answer is yes, then chances are they're going to probably want to work with you and cast you, etc. But if you're like the annoying guy or the mean girl or the difficult person, they're not going to want to spend 12 to 14 to 16 hours with you on set when you're filming.
Right.
So reflect on what it is that you're, the energy that you're bringing, the things that you're saying, the things that you're not saying. Just be normal. Yeah. You don't need to be funny. You don't need to impress anybody. You don't need to be mean. This isn't like, you know, Dance Moms. Like, don't, just be normal.
Yeah.
And connect with people, because it's all about relationships. And that will carry you where you need to be.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Melissa, for being Thanks on for the having podcast. Me.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.